Oh, yeah. That's what I'm talking about. That's what I want. Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the show, the Earl Ingram Show. I'm Stu Daniels filling in for Earl today. Hope you're having a good morning so far. Thanks for tuning in to your local civic media radio station. And we're getting into hour number two now of the show. Previous hour, discussing several things, including freedoms. And freedom, the freedom to be an American. What does that mean? And who stands for freedom these days? Is it the Republicans who want to take our freedoms away? The freedom to read books that we want to? The freedom to love who we want to? The freedom to decide whether we want to have children or not? Who stands for freedom these days? I'm going to get into this story about what happened in North Carolina last night, speaking of freedoms. But before I do, I want to go to the phones and see who we have on the phone. I think that Mary is on the line from Wauwatosa. Good morning, Mary. How are you today?
Good morning. Just fine, thanks. And welcome to Civic Media Airwaves again. It's a real pleasure to listen to you.
The comment,
which I think you're really highlighting, is that, and one of the things that I've recognized about conservative messaging for a long time is their great skill in using words, which on the surface, if you don't delve into it, they really sound positive, but it is manipulative, and people don't like being manipulated. And so that's what's happening, and good to be aware of it. And then I'd appreciate if you'd give that website again for us to take a look at.
From that article I was reading by Anand Giridharadas?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is that what you're... Yeah. His website is called The Ink, and it looks like it's THE.INK, although I might be wrong, but if you do a quick search for The Ink or Anand Giridharadas, his first name is spelled A-N-A-N-D, and I don't have the spelling of his last name right in front of me, but I believe it's G-H-I-R-A-I-R-A-D-A-S or something along those lines. But he's pretty easy to find. And you see him occasionally on MSNBC, and it seems like he's got a good insight into a lot of things. Now, he always makes me think, and that's one of the important things. Mary, thank you for the call. Anything else before you go?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you for the call. Let's move on and talk to an old friend, Al. Al, are you on the phone? Is this the coach?
What is happening, Stu?
Al Holmes, how you doing, man? Hey, it's great to hear from you.
I was
still kicking, but not
your voice. And then I thought about it. I said, well, somebody's been playing some decent music. So it's got to be Stu.
Hey, that's funny. I'm glad you mentioned that because I want to give a shout out to my producer back at the headquarters, the Civic Media headquarters, Calvin. He's actually been choosing all the music for me today and yesterday, and he's doing a great job. I can't even believe all the stuff he's playing, but thank you for mentioning that. It does sound like he's playing music from my collection. So I agree with you, Al, 100%.
He's trying to draw another audience.
Yeah.
So that's why he got me back.
No. That's good, man. It's good to hear you back. How are you doing these days? Okay.
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Yeah. Great to hear from you.
Track of Earl. And when I didn't hear his voice, I said, who in the world is this on the radio? And then I didn't hear the name, but then I knew the voice came back to me. It's good to hear you, man. I'm glad you joined the club again.
Yeah. Thank you. It's great to be here. I'm having a good time.
Your comment about what you're talking about, and I'm going to say this only one way I can. I've been black in America all my life, and I don't know what the word freedom means. I just turned 79. Served in the military. Used to be a police officer. I still don't know how to define the word freedom. So, good topic.
I'd like to
hear what other people think.
Yeah, before you go, let me ask you to expand on that a little bit or expound, you know. Tell me what you mean. You don't know what freedom means. Do you feel like you haven't felt freedom?
I have been black in America all my life. I was born in America. but I've never seen freedom. The government of the United States came in, and they were thieves, robbers, what have you, people who were kicked out of Europe and resettled in this country. And the first thing they did was kill off as many Native Americans as possible and stole their land. You know, you buy a house today, what are you buying? You're buying the house. The land belongs to the government. If you do not pay taxes, then they put you off your off their land. You can take your house with you if you have that capacity. But you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, I understand what you're saying, man.
Well, what I'm saying, how are you going to be free if you can't own the property? You go to other countries, you buy land, it's yours, and you can pass it down to your family and generations later. In this country, you don't own the land. So, where's the freedom?
Yeah, that's an interesting angle, Al, as usual. You got always got good stuff to say. I appreciate the call, and it sure is great to hear from you, man.
It's good to hear your voice. Take care of yourself. And
all right, bro.
Keep coming in.
Yeah, I will. Thank you. Take care. All right, let's go to the next call. It looks like CJ from Stoughton. I bet he's got some good things to say. Good morning, CJ. How you doing today?
I am good. Thanks for taking my call, Stu. It's really sad to hear that gentleman just prior speak of America this way. Freedom is not kicking veterans out of housing the way it's going on right now. Right, Stu? They're kicking veterans out for undocumented illegal aliens. 6.2 million have come in. That's not freedom. There's the right way. The Republicans, like I am, believe in legal immigration. The bottom line, you wait till you try to see the Democratic Party, and I've been called wrong for calling it Democrat Party. That's symbolism. But I'm referred to as the party of death. That's one of your callers calls in and says, I'm from the party of death. That's respect. So I'd like to hear you talk about the policy that this president, you call it freedom, on day one, I think he took away our sovereignty. We're seeing the chaos. We're living your democratic policies today. This is your party's policies we're trying to straighten out. So do you agree with kicking veterans out of their houses to put in illegal, undocumented immigrants? Do you believe in that, Stu? I'd like to hear your answer. And you wouldn't take my call on Daniel and Neely, the murder in the so-called alleged murder in the subway. You wouldn't take my call yesterday, and I was very disappointed in that because this gentleman was
Wait a minute.
No,
I talked to you yesterday, CJ. You called in, and I talked to you. I remember talking to you.
Well, then Kelvin won't let me through because I was on hold for another hour and 40 minutes when you wanted to hear from conservatives about that issue. But I do appreciate you taking my call today, and thank you very much. I do love Kelvin's music. And I look forward to talking to you again. But I would like to know, are you okay with them kicking out veterans?
No, of course I'm not. But I'm not sure exactly what you're referring to. You think that veterans are getting kicked out of their homes?
They're getting kicked out of the hotels that your party is taking over. Just, I mean, you obviously and... You know, I give you credit. I think you try to see both sides, and thank you for taking my call. But it is happening. Yes, veterans are getting kicked. Homeless veterans who have been housed being kicked out of the hotels all over the country for these illegals that are the mass release that is going on by your
president. Yeah, I haven't seen that. CJ, I'm going to...
He's my president, too.
Yeah, I appreciate... Listen, I appreciate you calling. But I want you to call me back with the information on that, because I haven't seen that veterans are getting kicked out in the streets so that immigrants can go into their spaces. I haven't seen that. So why don't you call me back with some information on that, and we'll look into it. All right. Thank you for the call. We only got a couple more minutes here before the next break. Before we get to that break, I just want to give you an idea of what happened in North Carolina last night. We're talking about freedoms, losing our freedoms because of what Republicans want for Americans. And this is from AP, Associated Press, AP News. The abortion after 12 weeks banned in North Carolina after GOP lawmakers override the governor's veto. Now, I don't know if you're aware, but North Carolina does have a Democratic governor, like so many states where gerrymandering has been put into full effect. The governor is a Democrat, while the state house is controlled by Republicans, similar to Wisconsin, Ohio, and several other states. Well, I guess Ohio doesn't have a Democratic governor, so excuse me for saying that. But there are several states around the country where gerrymandering has gotten to such a place that the state house is controlled by Republicans, but the governor is a Democrat because the Democrats win the statewide votes, just as in Wisconsin. So this is about North Carolina and what happened there. The Democratic governor did veto a law passed a few days ago to ban abortion after 12 weeks, but because one lawmaker who was a Democrat switched over to Republican, now they have the supermajority in North Carolina. And I'll get into this story just a little bit before the break. And this is Raleigh, North Carolina. Oh, it sounds like we're going to the break now. So I'll wait until the other side. This is going to be a short break. So stick around, everybody. You're tuned in to the Earl Ingram Show.
It's getting better all the time. I used to get mad at my school. The teachers that taught me weren't cool. They're holding me down, turning me round, filling me up with your rules. I've got to admit, it's getting better.
It's getting better. It's getting better all the time. Yeah, welcome back to the show. It's the Earl Ingram Show. I'm Stu Daniels filling in for Earl today. And if you want to join us on the phone, feel free. Give us a call. 844-967-2789 is the phone number. You can be on the radio. And you can also send me an email message if you want to. My email address is stumanradio@gmail.com. And Stu is spelled S-T-U. We've been talking about freedoms today. How free are we? And which party is it that wants to provide freedoms for American citizens? Is it the Republicans who seem to be taking more and more of our freedoms away? Or is the Democrats who are finally starting to talk about freedom and the fact that, we need to be free people in the United States? And that the other party, the Republicans, just seem to be taking more and more of our freedoms away. What does it mean to be free in the United States today? And we got a rebuttal call from our friend CJ in Stoughton. And he was telling us how we're not free and that veterans aren't free because they're being kicked out of their homes because illegal aliens by the millions are coming over the border, and that now these illegal aliens, as he calls them, are being housed in places that veterans were being housed, and now the veterans are out in the street, right? That's what he said. But is that true? Well, fortunately, I've got a great producer back at the studio who looked up some of that information. And Calvin, I understand you got some information for us. What did you find out?
Yeah, so I did a little research, and the veterans that were evicted from these hotels in New York, it is it affected about 20 veterans. So it wasn't this huge, large-scale thing that CJ was making it out to be. These veterans were being put up in a hotel by a nonprofit organization, not by any government agency. The decision to evict the veterans in favor for the migrants was made by the hotel administrator, who had recently won an appeal to a judge to become a migrant shelter. And the reason that the hotel administrator made this decision is because they were receiving an extra $150 a night per migrant stay as opposed to the veteran stayers.
Hmm. That all sounds logical, and it sounds pretty simple. It doesn't sound like, you know, veterans are being turned out in the street by the hundreds or anything. So thank you for looking that up, man. Do you know what hotel that is? By the way, if you don't, that's okay.
It was the Crossroads Hotel in Manhattan.
All right. Well, thank you for looking that up, giving us the breakdown on that. I had a feeling that it wasn't exactly as CJ told us, but let's move on. We got 9:36 right now, the time, and I wanted to get to a story. You know, we've been talking about freedoms and how free are we? How free are we if everybody's got a gun on their belt? And we talk about our rights. You know, it's my right to own a weapon. It's my right to own a gun. I can own as many guns as I want to. I can own assault weapons. I can own assault weapons that would kill 100 people in a minute if I wanted to, but it's my right. Well, let me ask you this. Does your right to own guns, does your right to own assault weapons, does that outweigh the right of children to go to school? Does it outweigh the right of children to enjoy their day in school without having to see their classmates get ripped up by assault weapons that explode after they hit their little bodies? Does that right to own the weapons, does that outweigh the rights of American citizens to walk peacefully on their streets without being shot up by some crazy guy with an assault weapon who's mad about something? Whose rights are more important? There's an interesting article. It's an opinion piece in the New York Times today. It's by a gentleman named Harel Shapira. He's an associate professor of sociology at the University of Texas in Austin. And he has a really interesting take because he's not a gun guy, but he started hanging out with gun people and he learned a lot. I'll go into this a little bit before we go back to the phones. This piece says, I did not grow up around guns, but 10 years ago, I started attending firearms training classes. I wasn't there to learn how to protect myself or my family. I was there to learn what was taught in the classes themselves, which a broad coalition of groups, including many police officers, Republican and Democratic legislators, and gun violence prevention organizations have hailed as a path out of the nation's epidemic of violence, right? A good guy with a gun can stop a bad guy with a gun. That's what they like to say. Well, he says, I found something very different. The classes I attended trained students to believe that their lives are in constant danger. They prepared us to shoot without hesitation and avoid legal consequences. They instilled the kind of fear that has a corrosive effect on all interactions and beyond that, on the fabric of our democracy. I took 42 classes and conducted interviews with 52 instructors and 118 students in traditionally red states like Texas, as well as blue states like Massachusetts, in urban areas like Newark, as well as rural southern Illinois. In parentheses, it says the instructors knew I was there to conduct research. In keeping with my university's academic protocols, I had permission to take notes in class and to record interviews, but not to publish anyone's names. He goes on and says, most of all, I immersed myself in firearms schools in Texas, where I live, that cater to people who wish to learn how to use guns for self-defense. Some instructors in these schools told me they have been involved in drafting public safety protocols or running active shooter drills for public school teachers. Some of these instructors' students have gone on to open training programs of their own. While American gun culture has diversified in recent years, the overwhelming majority of firearms instructors in Texas, it's 75%, are white men. Many have a background in the military or law enforcement. Nationwide, more than 125,000 of them have taken a certification course offered by the National Rifle Association. Many states require instructors to complete additional training. First, the good news. Every firearms instructor I encountered was extremely serious about preventing accidents. When a student inadvertently pointed his gun at me for a moment, our instructor immediately chastised him, and when the student objected, saying he didn't have his finger on the trigger, the instructor became livid and threatened to kick him out of class. But teaching people how to avoid shooting someone by accident is a small part of what these classes are about. The primary lessons are about if and when to shoot someone on purpose. And this is where the trouble begins. Okay. Before I continue on with this story from the New York Times or this opinion piece, I want to go back to the phones. We've got a couple of people on hold. It looks like Jack from Merrimack is on hold. Jack, good morning. What do you have to say today?
Good morning. I'd like to get into the firearm stuff too, but I'm going to start out with what I intended to call about the Party of Freedom, the Republican Party. Let's take a look at this. In Wisconsin, the legislature, owned by the Republicans, entirely ignores the governor's calls to reconvene to deal with a variety of issues supported by majorities of Wisconsinites, from gun control to cannabis reform. They were out of session for 3/4 of a year twice in the last 3 years. And when he called them into session, the governor called them into session, they gavel in and gavel out in under a minute. They throw out hundreds of proposals in the governor's budget, from education support to middle-class tax relief, despite most of those being supported by the majority of the Wisconsinites. That includes expansion of Badger Care, which could basically provide insurance for another 30,000 Wisconsinites. They just don't seem to care about the freedom of those people to not worry about their health anymore. They enact draconian, I'd call them, gerrymandering that gives them nearly a 2/3 majority from under 50% of the votes. And in fact, the total votes of all the legislators that they got was fewer than the total votes that the governor or their lieutenant governor got. This gerrymandering, by the way, was okayed by the Republican-supported Wisconsin Supreme Court, in spite of the fact that the governor has the constitutional right to veto that legislation, and he did so. They've got draconian rules for voting, including what I consider excessive ID requirements, but they also removed authorized absentee ballot collection boxes, and they won't even, these laws won't even allow a wife to submit her husband's absentee ballot. And I actually, I was an election observer for the League of Women Voters, and I actually saw a woman come in, try to submit her and her husband's ballot, and they basically said, unless he is severely disabled so he can't possibly get in himself, doesn't make any difference if he's at work all day, you can't hand in his ballot. They've refused to deal with a law involving women's medical rights. That law is 175 years old, and it was enacted when slavery was legal and 3/4 of a century before women could even vote on it. They won't authorize popular referendum to deal with any of these issues, not even one. This isn't the democracy that promises us freedom. And this is just Wisconsin. In Florida, there's censoring of books, re-education, I'd call it, by defining what can and cannot be taught in classes, and even banning of factual history courses like AP Black History. And finally, even in the legislature, there is a proposal supported by Republicans to ban the only other viable political party, that would be the Democratic Party, under the guise that the party supported slavery. Of course, they did, but it was 150 years ago. So this is not freedom. This is not democracy. That's what the Republican Party does. How do they get voted into office? They use various flash words to incite fear and hatred and anger. Watch out, watch out. The immigrants are coming to take over. They're illegal. The borders are open. No, they're not. So I get tired of people that say, oh, the Republicans are the ones for freedom. No, I'm sorry. That's not the case. There's my rant for the day anyway.
Oh, Jack, that was great, man. It sounds like you've got all the facts lined up, man. I wish you did show preparation for me when I'm on the radio, man, just the way you've got everything lined up. And I agree with you 100%, man. It's like, what happened to the Republicans? They used to be the party that, you know, like to talk about freedom. But all they want to do is take more and more of our freedoms away from us. It's amazing. Jack, thank you very much for calling in today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And let's see, how much time do we have? Do we have enough time to get Tom back on?
We have about 90 seconds left.
All right, let's see what Tom has to say. Tom from L.A., you're back on the radio, man. What do you have for us this time?
All right, guys, just want to rebuttal CJ. One, thank you, CJ. I want to acknowledge you actually for calling us the Democratic Party, because that shows that you are in good faith of actually having a conversation rather than calling it the Democrat Party like you normally do. Second, when it comes to me calling the Republicans the pro-death party, prove me wrong. You have AR-15s and weapons of war in schools. You have capital punishment. You have COVID relief that basically was killing hundreds of thousands of people. You have food and shelter where people don't have a place to live, where basically that's death. All of these things are basically the pro-death party. And just because a woman has the freedom to choose does not mean that she's going to choose to terminate a pregnancy. That's the whole thing. Everyone keeps talking about pro-abortion, pro-life.
Yeah. No, hey, Tom, we're out of time, man. We got to go to a break, but I'm glad you called in with that stuff. As usual, great information. Got to take a break. It's a quick one, folks. Stick around. You're tuned in to the Earl Ingram Show. Welcome back, everybody. You're tuned in to the Earl Ingram Show. I'm Stu Daniels, filling in for Earl today. Hope you're having a good day so far. Thank you for joining us. If you want to join the conversation, feel free to call in. 844-967-2789 is the phone number. And just before the break, before we took those calls, I was talking about an opinion piece that's in the New York Times today by a gentleman who is an associate professor of sociology at the University of Texas in Austin, Texas. His name is Harel Shapira, and he was talking about this project he's been working on for the past 10 years, where he started taking gun training courses, not only in Texas, but in other states as well. He took 42 different classes and conducted interviews with 52 instructors and 118 students, not only in red states like Texas, but also blue states like Massachusetts, urban areas like Newark, New Jersey, and rural areas like Southern Illinois. He talked about what it was like taking these classes, what's being taught in these classes that are taught by white men. At least 75% of the classes he took were by the instructors were white men. And most of them have backgrounds in military or law enforcement, which is just what you'd expect, I guess. He says there's a little bit of good news. He says he thought the classes were taught pretty well, you know, as far as what was being taught in the class. But where I left off, he says, but teaching people how to avoid shooting someone by accident is a small part of what these classes are about. The primary lessons are about if and when to shoot someone on purpose. And this is where the trouble begins.
Instructors repeatedly told me that a big part of their job was to make people feel vulnerable, to make them aware of dangers they were not conscious of before, to understand that bad things can happen at any time. One instructor told me he encourages students to carry their gun at all times. If students say they plan to leave it in the car, he responds, quote, "So what you're telling me is the only time you are ever going to get attacked is if you are in your car?" End quote. The instructors describe a world teeming with violent and deranged individuals, and not just any individuals. The scenarios cluster around the public spaces of racially diverse cities. More often than not, an instructor who had been a high-ranking police officer said, the place you're likely to be attacked is in an urban part of society. Another instructor, also a former police officer, tells students to keep their gas tanks filled at least halfway to avoid situations in which, quote, it's the middle of the night and you need to get gas in downtown Houston, end quote. Outside a restaurant in Austin, Texas, an instructor saw a disheveled man sitting on the curb and nudged me in the other direction, directing me to pick up the pace. He said he had detected, quote, potential predatory behavior, end quote, and wasn't sure if this man was a panhandler or someone about to stick a gun in our faces. Instructors repeatedly told me that statistics about crime are meaningless when it comes to the need to carry a gun. It's not the odds, I heard on numerous occasions. It's the consequences. I have been taught strategies for avoiding interactions with strangers. I have participated in scenario training sessions in which students carrying guns loaded with plastic ammunition enact mock burglaries, home invasions, mass shootings, and attacks by Islamic terrorists. Repeatedly, the lesson was that I ought to shoot even when my instincts tell me otherwise. For example, in one scenario, an instructor pretended to punch someone I know and care about in the head. The instructor's back was toward me, so I held my fire. Later, I told him that I hadn't had enough information to act. Wrong answer. Being punched in the head can be fatal, the instructor told me, so there was no time to wait. I had never heard someone advocate shooting an unarmed person in the back. The instructor did it with a sense of moral, legal, and tactical clarity and conviction. Officially, the message is caution. A line I heard from multiple instructors was, if you are not about to die in the next 3 seconds, don't pull the trigger. If you are not 100% sure, then don't shoot. But relentlessly harping on the dangers that surround us changes the way students assess those risks. I experienced it myself. On a recent night, I saw a driver who didn't appear to realize that he was going the wrong way on a one-way street. As the other car approached, I began to slow down, roll down my window, and stick my hand out in a friendly gesture. Suddenly, I worried the other driver might have a gun. How might he respond to someone slowing down a car and waving at him in the middle of the night? Would he shoot? Probably not. But it's not the odds, I remember telling myself. It's the consequences. That's the great irony of firearms training. In learning how to use a gun for self-defense, something that seems like it might give you confidence and a sense of safety, people end up feeling more afraid than before. Quote, I knew the world was dangerous, a student told me after class one day, but this was a real wake-up call. He scared the daylights out of me, I heard from another student who went straight from class to a gun store. Others who already owned a gun told me the classes made them feel the gun should be bigger, with a larger caliber, and more capacity. Firearms instructors are not the only ones who make an appearance at self-defense classes. Lawyers do too. Lawyers who specialize in defending gun owners. They go to classes and tell students how to talk or not to talk to 911 operators and police officers in the event they shoot someone. In one seminar, a lawyer emphasized the importance of explaining, I had no choice. That's what you hear oftentimes, especially when police officers shoot someone. I had no choice. I felt threatened. Continuing with the story, it says, or this opinion piece, it says, with more than 200 mass shootings in our country this year alone, advocates of gun regulation often cite the tragic number of lives lost or the fact that gun-related injuries have surpassed car accidents as the nation's leading cause of injury-related death among people under 24. But another, less recognized casualty is the kind of public interactions that make democracy viable. The NRA says that an armed society is a polite society. But learning to carry a gun isn't teaching Americans to have good manners. It's training them to be suspicious and atomized. Learning to protect themselves no matter how great the risk to others. It's training them to not be citizens. I'm going to take a break. Top of the hour break. Stick around. Got the news coming up. You're tuned in to the Earl Ingram Show.
But if I ever find that you've changed at any time, it's not unusual.